This is Average Joe Finances Podcast, episode 41.
If you're watching this on YouTube, make sure you smash that like button and click subscribe. For those of you listening on a podcast platform, be sure to subscribe on whatever platform that is and leave us a rating if you can. The more likes, ratings, and subscriptions that we get, the more we can spread the message and grow our community. So we also have a free Facebook group. It's called the Average Joe Finances Network. Check us out, join the group, join the community, ask questions, and become a part of the team. All of our other social media accounts are listed in our flow page, and we have them in the video or podcast description below.
When understanding a market, first off, is obviously you can do a lot of internet research to figure out kind of the basic data-driven look at the market. But to get a more intimate understanding of what the market's like, even what a neighborhood or a particular property is like, knowing a good property manager is essential. And you're going to need them if you close on properties anyway to have run your property. So why not do that early and kind of build up their relationship?
Welcome to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. Are you trying to get out of debt, invest, or just not sure where to start? Then this is the place for you. We discuss different ways to get out of the rat race and build your wealth. Join us on this wild ride to financial freedom.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? So today we have our guest with us, Anthony Pinto, and he's the Chief Operations Officer for Mission Capital and the founder of Pinto Capital Investments. Mission First Capital was made for veterans by veterans, and their goal is to provide real estate opportunities to active duty and military veteran investors not otherwise available to our brothers and sisters. So they are investing in stable, real assets. It's no longer exclusive to just the rich and powerful. Okay, so working with experienced syndicators and partners, Anthony continues to acquire larger apartment buildings across the Southeast United States, focusing on the Hampton Roads, Virginia, and Georgia markets. So across the Hampton Roads area, Anthony has $20 million in assets under management and controls more than 300 units, all acquired this past year in 2020. So Anthony is also an officer in the Navy like me. He tends to go under the water, though. He's a submarine officer, and he spent 3 years on board the USS Albany, and he was operating and supervising critical reactor plant, commanding numerous watch teams and intense combat exercises as officer of the deck. And he successfully managed an arduous 5-year maintenance as an integral project manager. So Anthony's currently on a shore tour in Yokosuka, Japan. So Anthony, absolute pleasure having you on here, especially from overseas. Welcome to the show.
Awesome. Yeah, Mike, appreciate the intro and having me on here. And I must say it's refreshing to be able to talk with someone roughly in the same time zone as me for once and have an interview in the middle of the afternoon rather than having to do it, you know, early in the morning or late at night. So I definitely appreciate that.
Yeah, likewise. I mean, I normally don't get to interview people during the weekdays because when I talk to people on the East Coast, usually the time frames I'm available is, you know, between midnight and 4 o'clock in the morning, their time, and that's not going to work. So this is definitely a treat to be able to do it during the week.
Absolutely.
So, hey, I'd like to start this off the way I start off every episode. And we want to know a little bit about you. So if you could share with us your story, where'd you get started?
Sure. So, I am, like you said, a submarine officer. I've been in for, gosh, now at this point, almost 7 years of active duty time. Originally went to the Naval Academy class of 2014. And after I graduated, I was, you know, going to school up and down the East Coast, up Connecticut and New York, went down to Charleston for about 6 months, and then finally settled in the Norfolk area, where I went on my first submarine there at the USS Albany. And I was there from, 2016 to the end of 2018. So a little less than 3 years. And, it was my whole time there was a shipyard tour essentially. So it, wasn't the most exciting time to be on a submarine. I'll just say that. And, you know, I started realizing during that time that, you know, I was looking at my department heads and my XO and my CO, and it just, their jobs didn't look appealing to me, to say that. Like I couldn't see myself doing their jobs, you know, for the next 5, 10, 15 years to eventually get to that 20-year retirement. So, I really just started looking into other means to be able to, you know, either build a career, supplement my income, focus on something I was a lot more passionate about. And I stumbled upon real estate investing as a means to be able to do that. And specifically, I stumbled upon military guys who were doing real estate investing. And so, I met Stuart Grazer, if you guys know who that is. Great guy, super smart guy. And he put me onto a couple different books to read. And, so I read the Quintessential Rich Dad, Poor Dad when I was underway in the middle of 2018. And then also read a book called Set for Life by Scott Trench. And Scott Trench is now the CEO of Bigger Pockets. And he's also the podcast host, I think, for Bigger Pockets Money, too. But in this book, he talked about how you can, what kind of financial decisions you can make with your life to, kind of propel your life in a certain direction and make sure you're kind of setting yourself up in terms of the savings you have, kind of making your money work for you, even if you don't have a lot of money to work with. And one of the things he talked about within that book was this concept of house hacking. And, for your listeners who may not know, house hacking is essentially buying a property, and it can be, a single family home all the way up to, a quadplex, living in one of the units or living in one of the rooms and then renting out the other rooms or the other units and having your mortgage completely paid for, and maybe even making some additional money on top of that. So, I was 3 months away from the end of my C tour reading all this, and I was like, man, this seems freaking awesome. Like, I totally want to do this. So, day before Thanksgiving, 2018, got off my boat. The next week, I was going to my first real estate meetup. 2 weeks after that, we had a quadplex under contract in the Hampton Roads area. And then about a month after that, we closed on it. And it kind of just started the snowball effect of like, oh my gosh, like this, these opportunities that we have here are incredible. To buy a smaller multifamily and kind of make a career for ourselves while still, working active duty at that time. And at the beginning of 2019, I still had about 3 years left, almost 4 years left now, until I was going to get out. So I was like, okay, well, I can build myself a runway with real estate investing while still doing, active duty, still doing my active duty job. So, so we bought the quad using our VA loan, and my wife and I moved in there and house hacked that for about a year before we came out here to Japan. And during that same time, we also did a joint venture with a couple other Navy guys on a triplex in the same area in Hampton Roads area. And then shortly after, I started thinking to myself, we could do these small multifamily deals here or there and eventually build up to 100, 200 units and kind of be set for life, if you will. And or we could just go straight to 150, 50, 100, 200 unit apartment buildings and, not only get more bang for our buck, but get more money out of it, bring in other investors into the deal, and generally have more stable returns, spread out the rate. I mean, a lot of different factors that go into, large multifamily versus single family or even smaller multifamily. So that really just got me thinking, okay, well, I need to go bigger. I need to think bigger. So started going to a lot of different large apartment multifamily conferences, networking with people, building all these connections and stuff. And then in July of 19, I had a property in Kansas City under contract, which is where I'm from originally. And I had it just myself under contract. And, during the process of going through due diligence and like negotiating this, I realized that I had literally none of the wickets I needed to take down this property. Like, I didn't have any net worth, no liquidity. I couldn't even raise any capital for this. I didn't have any, I literally had nothing set for this. And, and I was about to move out of the country, about 6 months later. So I ended up pulling the plug on it. It cost me about, $5,000 and travel cost and inspection costs. And frankly, it was money well spent, because it at the very least made me realize that large multifamily and, operating at this level is much more of a team sport. And so I started bringing on other partners who could kind of fill in these gaps I didn't have, guys who were local to a particular area, guys who had particular skill sets or experience or, could help raise capital. A lot of the gaps that I personally had in my resume, if you will. So the second half of 2019 was more focused on trying to build those partnerships. And I also realized that, you know, I had to think about the things that I could do in here in Japan that were going to, I guess, still kind of get my name out there and still kind of add value to people. And one of the things I thought of was to start a podcast. So I started the Lessons in Real Estate Show podcast in the beginning of 2020. And but I started doing interviews for it before I left to come here. And one of the first interviews I did was with my current business partner, Phil Capron, who was in the Hampton Roads area with me as well. And he, after we got done with the interview, was like, hey, I have this deal, you know, it's a 104 unit deal in Chesapeake, which at that time was about 10 minutes away from where I lived. And he asked me, you know, would you be interested in coming in on this if you could help raise capital for it? So, you know, I was like, sure. And so, you know, long story short, 3 months later, you know, I'm here in Japan. And actually this past week, a year ago, we closed on our first property, 104 unit property. And, you know, the dominoes just kind of started falling from there. So closed on a 112 unit in September of last year, 92 unit in October. And now we've set ourselves up to have the fund launched this year and purchase a lot more real estate in the coming year. But that's kind of the quick and dirty of how I got started in real estate and where we've been.
Wow. That is a fantastic way to start things off. I mean, 2020, what a year that was for you. I mean, you know, right before you left to go to Japan, you had this, you know, like this deal just kind of fall into your lap, but it didn't really fall into your lap, right? There was a lot of work that went into this. You know, you started a podcast and you were networking with a whole bunch of people, going to these meetups. And I think that's one of the important things that a lot of people don't realize, that when you see something like that, you see like, oh, you know, this guy just got lucky because somebody showed up and said, hey, you want to go in on this deal with me? And that's not the case. I mean, you were putting in that work. So, and not to mention you had a costly lesson learned with that whole Kansas City thing. So, you know, trying to take down a property on your own, I don't want to get too personal or anything, but I mean, if you weren't able to raise the capital, it must've been, you know, a pretty expensive property. And was it a multifamily? Was it an apartment?
Yeah, it was a 34 unit deal. Multifamily apartment.
Okay. Yeah. So you went out there and you went to go check it out, and just as you were doing your due diligence, realized it wasn't going to be in the cards for you, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I'll just say there's a reason why I wasn't able to raise capital for it. And it's because I really didn't know what I was doing. And I was trying to convince investors that to come invest with me when I didn't have any of the skill sets needed to be able to do this, any of the, you know, the checks in the boxes essentially to be able to take this down. So luckily it was only in due diligence and I only lost, you know, a little amount of money that we had into it.
Right on. Yeah. So again, I mean, that was a good lesson learned for you. And it got you to the point where, you know, you're at right now, where you've educated yourself, you've got the right connections, you're with the right partners, and you're taking down some bigger deals. So definitely want to say congratulations for everything that you've been doing so far, especially now from overseas. So, you know, well done, job well done. And I know the Hampton Roads area is not an easy market to mess around with, especially when it comes to multifamily, because mm-hmm. I had a buddy of mine, me and him were looking out there at different properties. We were looking at a 12 unit in Portsmouth, and, you know, again, running our due diligence on it, it was really tough to try to justify making those numbers work. So definitely a complicated market out there with all the military presence and everything. So mm-hmm. Yeah, awesome, man. So normally I would ask you, you know, what are you doing on your journey to or in financial freedom? But I think we've got a really good idea, man. You're crushing it in real estate. You know, so I want to kind of touch on, you know, one of the things that you said about, you know, you started off with house hacking, right? And I think, you know, a lot of people, if you can start off in that type of way or that type of investment for your first home, it's probably the best route to go, because you're going to be able to, you know, save up some cash, because you're going to be, you know, having your mortgage paid for by someone else. And on top of that, you're building equity and you're building experience now as a landlord, right? Even though you live in the building, you know, you're the landlord and you're getting that experience of managing tenants and, mm-hmm. and also not having to worry about how your mortgage is getting paid. So by going from there, to from a smaller multifamily into larger multifamily? Into larger multifamily. So how was that transition for you? Like when you decided that I'm going to go bigger, I don't want to, you know, keep doing, you know, duplexes, triplexes and quadplexes to get to 100 units. I want to go take down, you know, a 64 plus unit, 100 unit, 109, you know, what flipped that switch for you and got you started there?
Sure. So, you know, one of the biggest things that really made a difference, and kind of like opened my mind to going bigger was first off, realizing that that was an option. You know, I had heard of some people who were doing that, but my pool of people that I was connecting with locally in Hampton Roads were, you know, they were a lot of smaller fish, I guess you could call it that. So they doing smaller multifamily or single family or, you know, flips or burrs, like, you know, kind of smaller stuff. And so I wasn't really exposed to, you know, large multifamily as an option until I met one of my really good friends, introduced me to Michael Blanc and his program. And, you know, she was working with him as a mentee student. And she was just like, hey, you should take a look at this, like take a look at his book, like, you know, the opportunities here in larger multifamily are unlike what you're going to find, you know, really in any other asset class. And so I think that was the first thing is one, first getting educated about it and kind of realizing like, oh my gosh, like, you know, there's so many benefits to this over, you know, flips or even just over single family housing, rental housing in general. And then the second thing was realizing that, you know, I was spending just as much time essentially managing my single family home as I was my quad. And the more people I talked to who were doing large apartment buildings, the more I realized that that's true, you know, at 100 units or 200 units, so on and so forth, right? And there's obviously a lot of work that goes into it when you first buy an apartment building, just like there's a lot of work that goes into it when you first buy a quad and you got to go in and you renovate it. And, you know, and unless everything's like perfectly squared away and turkey, right, you know, there's a certain amount of work you have to do to kind of turn it around to get it stable. But honestly, like this, you know, the amount of time you spend, you know, operating those properties is very comparable to a single family home or a quad or whatever else. So it was more bang for my buck to be able to do larger properties and, you know, and actually get more money out of it too. Cause now you're talking, you know, when you're talking a $10 million property, you're talking 1%, 2%, even 3% acquisition fee. Not only that, but you're getting cash flow from it, right? There's a lot of inherent benefits from large multifamily that you're gonna find versus, you know, smaller multifamily or single family homes. So that was kind of the three first reasons why I got into it. And you know, honestly, it was just really exciting to me. It was really exciting to look at these different properties and break them down and, you know, underwrite them and, you know, negotiate a deal. And, you know, it was like, trying to figure out a puzzle every single time. It's like, okay, I know what the end state is here. This is where our starting timeline is, or starting property or starting price. How can we get to the end state where it's mutually beneficial for both of us, right? You know, while also competing with other people for the same deal, while also being like, okay, you don't have a lot of time to get this done, right? So it was like a big puzzle and a big game. And that was like exciting to me.
Right on. Yeah, man, that's fantastic. So, you know, one of the things that, you know, you have to do when you're taking down these larger multifamily properties is find the capital, right? And I want to talk a little bit about what you're doing with Mission First Capital, right? Especially for some of our listeners that might not, you know, qualify to be an accredited investor. So we'll talk a little bit about that. So something that I think's unique about what you guys are doing is how you fund your deals, right? Especially for many like the military members out there and veterans who might, you know, they might find it difficult to invest in a multifamily syndication. Especially if they don't qualify to be an accredited investor. So I kind of have a two-part question here, right? Yes. Can you explain to our listeners the difference between like regular, I would say crowdfunding and regulation A plus? Also, how do you use regulation A plus funding to bring non-accredited investors into your syndications?
Sure. So I'll give you a little background on kind of the impetus for Mission First Capital in the first place. So, you know, we did three large deals last year in 2020, and all three of them were syndications, and specifically they were 506B syndications. And, you know, for your listeners that may not, you know, know what that all means, it's just a regulation under the SEC that allows us to raise private capital without having to essentially be registered with the SEC. It's almost uniquely suited for real estate deals of this nature that have kind of a quick turnaround where, you know, you need to, you know, kind of make the company and raise the capital and get everything buttoned up in about, you know, 3 months time is typically about how long it takes for to close on a property. So that being said, you know, the regulations within those, you know, rural Ds are broke up into two specific ones. You got 506B, which gives you the ability to have up to 35 non-accredited or essentially regular investors. But you can't advertise, and you essentially have to know individuals within who are running those deals to even be able to get into it. And, you know, I'll preface that by saying that I'm not even an accredited investor yet, right? Like I don't even have access to a lot of the deals that you're seeing on Facebook or you're seeing on the internet, because those deals are specifically, most of those are specifically what's called a 506C offering. And that means that they can go public, they can generally solicit, but every single investor that's a part of that has to be an accredited investor. And so frankly, in my opinion, it's kind of an arbitrary financial status that is given to individuals who make a certain amount of money, which in this case, as of now is $200,000 for an individual or $300,000 for a spouse and or a couple, including the spouse, or you have a net worth in excess of $1 million, not including your primary residence. So that obviously excludes a lot of military guys where half of your income is essentially BAH and is not taxable. So it makes it very difficult to be able to have access to those types of deals, with the very few exception of a few accredited investors I found that are military guys who, you know, have been starting or doing this for a long time and they've been saving money and putting it aside. So with the exception of that, you know, military guys, including myself, don't really meet that kind of financial wicket. So the three syndications we did last year were all 506Bs, and we were able to bring in, you know, non-accredited investors into those deals. But, you know, like I said, there's only 35 that you can bring in, and you have to actually know the people who are bringing them in. So, you know, for the millions of other military guys out there who want to get into these types of deals, but don't necessarily didn't know us, right? You're kind of SOL. So
Going to meetups.
Right. Exactly. Sure. Right. So frankly, it was frustrating. It was frustrating knowing that, you know, there's a vast majority of the people who invested specifically with me were all military investor guys who wanted to have access to these deals, but didn't have this accredited status. They didn't have $50,000 or $75,000 or $100,000 to throw into these deals, which is, you know, the vast majority of the minimums you're going to see for typical syndications. And frankly, they just didn't have the time to go in and be active on these deals, right? They wanted to be a lot more passive. So there's just a lot of barriers to entry there that frankly made it only a better option for a lot of rich and powerful guys who had the money to throw into these deals and had the financial status to be able to do it. So that being said, you know, we knew that we wanted to bring in more military guys into these deals. And one of the ways that we could do that is what's called a Regulation A Plus offering. And what makes a Regulation A Plus offering, or a real estate fund in this case, different than a normal syndication is a number of different reasons. One, it's a completely different SEC regulation, right? So we are actually registered with the SEC. We are actually, you know, listed, I guess, as a public offering on the SEC website versus other syndications that are not. They're private placements, essentially. And the regulation gives us the ability to offer to an unlimited amount of accredited and or non-accredited investors, right? So, you know, your average Joes can invest in this, you know, in a much smaller minimum that you're typically going to see in a syndication.
I like it.
And so that's the other ticket, is that, you know, a lot of the guys didn't have $50,000 to throw around, and the minimum we have for, you know, our fund is a much, much smaller. It's sitting at $5,000 versus $50,000 for a lot of these larger deals. And in the last thing with it is that it is a fund versus a syndication. And a syndication, to use a traditional term, when someone describes a syndication, it's normally one property that they're raising capital for, right? So I go buy this 100-unit apartment building for, you know, we'll say $2 million. I need to raise $1 million for a total. I go find, you know, 10 investors that each bring in $100,000 and, you know, we close on that deal. And it's all that money is tied to one particular property. With a real estate investment fund, and specifically, you know, what we're doing here with the Reg A Plus, it's spread across multiple different properties. So our goal for this year is to raise $30 million. And that $30 million is going to be spread across multiple different properties, across multiple different markets, across even across multiple different states. And so it's inherently diversified across, you know, a number of different cash flowing type of properties, appreciation markets, you know, population growth type of markets, different industries and different markets, right? So, you know, just like you want to diversify your money in a mutual fund where you put some in, you know, in large cap funds, or you put it into, you know, international funds, or you put it into an S&P index fund, right? And you kind of spread out your money across multiple different funds. The idea is similar here, right? And you want to have your money spread across multiple properties rather than one. And frankly, in my opinion, I'd much rather have that, right? If, you know, if I'm going to just say throw in $50,000, I'd rather have $50,000 spread across, you know, 10 different properties rather than have it all put into one property. And now that property goes down and, you know, you've lost your investment essentially, right? So those are kind of the big differences for, you know, what really makes a difference between a syndication and Regulation A Plus offering and what we're doing, and why we're able to, you know, bring in our military brothers and sisters when they otherwise wouldn't have access to a lot of these deals.
Right on. That's fantastic. So I've got a question though. You know, when you're doing the, you know, the fund for multiple properties across multiple state lines, do you run into any issues with different states having different rules and regulations for specific properties? Do you find that, you know, investing in one, you know, I guess some of your funds in one state versus another is more beneficial, you know, due to local laws and regulations? Do you run into any of that?
Yeah. So I guess you really have to be kind of be specific, and know your particular market in your particular state. So, I think what you're getting at is there's certain states are more landlord friendly versus tenant friendly, right? There's certain states that have better taxation on property versus others. There's certain states that allow, the ability to do sub metering versus the RUB system to do bill back, right? And your business plan is going to change based off of different states, that you have, right? Some states are going to have rent control. Some of them are not. Some states are going to have, you know, you have to kind of jump through certain hoops to close on a property, right? Some states and counties are going to have taxes, you know, assessed at a different time, right? Versus other states that may not, you know, may take another 2 years for your taxes to go up. So it really does behoove you to understand the market that you're going to get into before you actually get into it, right? So my recommendation is that you should never jump into a market if you don't know how the population growth is, you don't know what the job industry looks like, what multiple types of job industries there are in the area. If you don't know what your employment basis is like within your specific neighborhood, even if you don't know what the crime in the neighborhood is like, right? There's a lot of different things that go into in determining if the property is right for you outside of just the property itself. And honestly, there have been times when the property is like, oh my gosh, this math works out perfectly. Like, we're going to make so much money off of this. But then you realize that it's in, you know, a really awful area. And the reason why they're selling it at such a low price is because they need someone to take it off their hands, right? But you're never really going to know that unless you know the market and you know the area and you know all these rules and regulations within those states. So yeah, I mean, to answer your question, yeah, there are different rules and regulations, and you really just kind of need to do your research on that. And you know, one thing that would help with you with that is when you're going to look into a new market, is one of the first things I like to do is find a property manager in that market. Because they're going to know if they're worth their salt, they've been around for a while, they're going to know all the rules and regulations. They're going to know you know, this property or that property. Like, they're even going to know the owners and the sellers and how all that interaction works. And like, hey, this guy bought this property 5 years ago, you know, they're probably coming up on wanting to sell it soon, because they're, you know, their plan was only 5 years, or they only got, you know, they had a balloon payment at 5 years or whatever. So that's huge when understanding a market. First off, is obviously you can do a lot of internet research to figure out kind of the basic data driven look at the market. But to get a more intimate understanding of what the market's like, even what a neighborhood or a particular property is like, knowing a good property manager is essential. And you're going to need them if you close on properties anyway to have run your property. So why not do that early and kind of build up their relationship?
Let's take a brief moment to hear from our show sponsors. What's going on, everybody? So I am happy to announce that we now have our video and audio editing services live. So whether you're starting a brand new YouTube channel or a podcast, or you're already established, we have services that'll fit your needs. Go check it out, www.averagejoefinances.com/services, and you can see all the services that we have to offer, including our newest audio and video editing. What's going on, everybody? So today I want to talk to you about WealthTender. If you are a finance content creator, whether that's a blog, a podcast, you're a financial advisor or a financial coach, I highly recommend you check out WealthTender. WealthTender is building a database of all the top finance blogs, podcasts, and the financial advisors and financial coaches that they have on there are vetted and top-notch. So we actually had the pleasure of hosting Brian Thorpe, the CEO and founder of WealthTender, on Average Joe Finance's podcast episode 25. Go check out that episode, listen to his story, and listen to him talk about the database that he's building. It's really phenomenal stuff. So if you're interested in checking out the directory, or if you're a finance content creator and you're interested in joining up with the directory, go to the link below in the show notes, or check out www.averagejoefinances.com/wealthtender. Let's get back to today's episode.
You're listening to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. Whether it's single or multifamily real estate, the stock market, or side hustles, we discuss it all. Strap in and enjoy the ride.
Yeah, there's definitely a theme here, especially everybody that I interview that's involved in real estate and just being involved in real estate myself. And that is, no matter what you do, the team that you build is super important. So, so what you're doing out there, just grabbing, you know, a property manager right off the bat and being able to pick their brain is probably a great way to really, you know, understand the market and then what the rules and the regulations are for the area. So that's phenomenal. That's good stuff. So now you... Normally I would ask, you know, how long you've been doing this, but, you know, we've kind of gone over that and, you know, you've had some fantastic growth, you know, from being in, Virginia to, now being in Japan. So in just a short period of time, out of everything that you've done from the house hacking to now getting into multifamily and what you're doing with that, and now what you're doing with the fund, what do you enjoy the most? Out of, you know, out of all the things that you've done so far, what would you say was the most enjoyable?
You know, it's, I would say that, you know, it's, I think there's a misconception that people have that, you know, you're controlling $20 million under of assets under management, and you control 300 units and you must have $1 million and be driving a Bentley around and stuff. And like, you know, why are you in the military? Cause you have all this money. And I think that, it's a misconception, because I think a lot of people don't fully understand what it takes to buy into these properties. So just like you're raising money through a syndication, you know, and you're diluting kind of the equity in there, the general partnerships gets very little of the actual piece of the pie, if you will, depending on how you structure it. Right. So, for example, on the 104 unit deal that we did, you know, I only have, I think, 3% total of the deal. Right. So I'm making, I think, like 700 ish at most dollars a month over, and it's done quarterly. Our distribution is done quarterly, but it's about $700 a month for one property, which, I mean, it's a good chunk of money, but it's not like I'm, you know, going to go buy the Grant Cardone jet and fly it around to, you know, my 20 minutes to base and back. But it's good money. And, you know, I think that, you build up these units and you build up this credibility and you build up this track record to eventually start doing larger and larger and larger unit deals. And it kind of, the snowball really gets going once you actually get up and go. And that's honestly what's exciting to me. It's kind of like finding these deals and raising the capital for it and building something bigger than me, right? You know, a lot of, I think, operators look at these properties as a way to make money off of them. And, you know, and first and foremost, that really kind of should be the drive, right? You know, if the property's not making money, you're not making money for your investors. Your investors aren't going to stick around with you too long, right? And you're going to be bleeding money. And it's just, obviously needs to be a great business decision. But you also have to realize that there's real people living in these properties, and you have an opportunity to make a better living situation for them have a better life, right? And the better living situation you provide for them, the better quality tenants you have. And I mean, it's really as simple as that, right? It's kind of the notion that if you build it, they will come. Well, I have found that to be true over and over and over again, right? If you're providing a lower class property and you're expecting, you know, it to be sold or to be rented for $1,000 a month when the average in the area is, you know, 500, probably not going to happen, right? But if your property is like the best in the area, you have the highest quality, everything, like you provide the best, you know, amenities, the best tenant service, you know, the best property manager, whatever else, right? That obviously gives you a better reputation and the opportunity to have much higher rents than you otherwise would be able to, right? And it also brings with it better quality tenants who are more likely to pay, tenants who are more likely to be able to pay if a financial situation hits, right? So that's really what's is pretty cool for me, is to see, you know, like I said, a year later here, what progress has been made on Marina Point, our 104 unit deal, in 1 year's time. I mean, it's, you know, replacing roofs, installing dog parks, upgrading the landscaping in the area. We were planning on doing 60 units of renovations, and I think we've gotten about 40 something in about a year. And, you know, it's incredible to see, you know, not only the amount of rent that we've been able to increase on it, but the quality of lives that we've been able to increase as well. Like, and you're seeing that in the Google reviews we're having, you're seeing that in the interactions the tenants are having with the leasing staff, you know, the overall quality and the kind of the culture and the mood of a property. That's really exciting to me, is to be able to see that and, you know, operate off that. Outside of the individual properties, you know, one of my missions is to support, encourage, and and overall invigorate 1 million military members to financial freedom. And I count every military member I talk to about real estate or about the fund or about, you know, what I'm doing in my life as a person that I've touched in doing that. And so, you know, the fund kind of gave me obviously a way to bring in a lot of military guys and be able to help support them. And, you know, I've had some tremendous conversations even just with investors about what we're doing here with the fund itself, and like how that's going to help them, you know, make their money work for them. And I think there's not a lot of people that are doing that right now, especially with what's going on with the stock market. And a lot of people are saying stocks are going to go to the moon, and a lot of guys are losing out on money. It's a crazy time to be in the stock market. So I think there's definitely a need for, you know, the fund like this, and specifically with military guys.
Yeah, right on. So, you know, I'm running out of page space here with all these notes with, you know, golden nuggets that you're just throwing out here. You know, one of the things that you said that really stuck out to me is that, you know, you started to notice this snowball effect when you decided to just get up and go, right? So you went out there and you took action. And I'm not, you know, I wouldn't say, like, don't downplay that 3% that you're in there, that $700 a month that you're getting. Because you know what 3% is better than? It's better than 0% for sure. People that are not taking action. So, hey, man, 3% of the deal is still part of the deal. You're in there and you're getting something out of it. So that's that's phenomenal. And so, you know, something else that you said, I just want to point this out real quick because I really like this. It's a testament to your mentality and, you know, how you are, you know, your characterization as a person as well. And, you know, one of the things you're talking about here is making sure that you're creating a better, better living situation for your tenants. Right. And something else that you said too, is just how you're changing the culture and the mood of that property. So I just want to point that out. I really like that. I really like, you know, that you're taking into account that you're not just in it to get a couple bucks back. You're out here trying to create a better living situation for some individuals that might have been living in a rougher spot before you took over the property and started, you know, doing your renovation. So I wanted to point that out. So go ahead with what you were going to say. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I just want to kind of tack on to what you're talking about of, you know, kind of the smaller piece of the pie. Yeah. I think a lot of people, when they first get started, I think that they don't want to give up a piece of the pie. And, you know, they found this deal, they want to own 100% of it. And, you know, they want to kind of throw a bone to someone who can kind of fill a lot of these wickets for them or bring capital in or whatever else. But, you know, the old adage is it's better to have, you know, 10% of a watermelon than 0% of a grape or 100% of a grape, right? And in the long run, the partnerships that you build and the teams that you have on board on these larger deals will benefit you, you know, eventually, right? You know, Warren Buffett and Grant Cardone and them didn't start off with $1 billion in their account to start buying real estate or start buying stock or start buying companies, right? They started with having to, you know, get loans from people, right? They started with having to work their ass off in sales and build up their own capital and start building relationships and stuff, right? And so Rome isn't built in a day. And I think that you have to realize that when you're approaching these, especially as a new syndicator or a new operator, that sometimes you got to give up a piece of the pie and just take a smaller portion of that to get the ball rolling so that you can get to your fifth, your sixth, your seventh, your 100th deal. And now you can own, you know, 60% of it or 80% of it or even 100% of it if you have enough money built up and you start taking down deals yourself, right? But you got to start somewhere and don't let that stop you from getting started just because you're getting, you know, quote unquote, a smaller piece of the pie because someone else has to, you know, wants a larger piece that, you know, frankly, probably deserves it because of what they're bringing to the table.
All right. So you did it to me. I had to start another page of notes because you'd had to throw some more awesome wisdom out there. So thank you. Yeah, absolutely. Getting a piece of the pie is still something, right? So, and if you find that deal, you find that pie and you want to sit there and hoard it. I mean, eventually, you know, especially if you can't take it down by yourself, eventually it's going to go bad and it's going to rot. And now you're going to have a nasty pie that you can't do nothing with. So, that's good stuff. that's awesome, man. So, okay. So we're talking a lot about team, right? Cause you mentioned the team a lot, right? So, what do you and your team do, right, as you're looking to take down some of these bigger deals? What do you guys do to mitigate risk for both yourselves as the operators and then for your investors that are going in on this piece of the pie with you?
Sure. So I think the number one thing is obviously having the right traffic record and the right experience in the right places, right? If you're brand new and you're building a team with other brand new guys and you're thinking that you're going to start taking down deals, I think you're going to quickly find that you're ill-suited to be able to do that, right? Someone on your team has to have the experience. And so one of the things I like to talk to new investors about is if you're getting started, you got to have one of three things: money, time, or experience. And obviously money gets you in a lot of doors, but a vast majority of people don't have that. And vast majority of people also, when they're especially getting started, don't have the experience. So if you have the time to be able to spend on real estate investing, whether that's looking at deals, talking with investors, underwriting things, you know, looking up markets, going traveling and actually viewing the properties, right? That's worth a lot to individuals who may have the money and the experience, but may not have as much time or want to leverage their time to do bigger and bigger deals. So, you know, my team and I are taking that into account when we're looking at deals is, hey, do we have the right experience to be able to take down this particular property, right? Well, we have a very distinct niche that we stick to, right? Class B, Class C value add properties. We have, you know, very distinct markets that we stick to right now, right? Hampton Roads area and my one property in Savannah. We have a very distinct, kind of business plan that we're looking at, or very distinct property managers that we work with, or contractors that we work with, right? So we have a lot of these details already ironed out. So when we find a property, we are like, okay, we already, we can build the business plan in about 5 minutes after touring this property, right? We know how much it's going to cost to renovate all these units, even if we even have to renovate them, right? We know, hey, there's an issue with delinquency on this property. You know, that can be handled by bringing in a professional property management company to kind of handle a lot of these tenants that aren't paying, right? So once you have all these pieces in place and the right experience already under your belt, the risk mitigation kind of takes care of itself, right? I think the second part of what you're trying to get at is how do you underwrite conservatively and mitigate risk that way? And I think first and foremost, don't look at what the pro forma says. Like I don't even look at all at what the broker sends over outside of if they have pictures or they have kind of data on the market or they have, other properties that they're comparing to, right? I look strictly at what the rent roll is showing and what the actual P&L and the actual rent roll is showing, because that's the actual truth. Unless the sellers are lying to you, which sometimes it happens. Sometimes you get false records and stuff. But the vast majority I've interacted with have been true in their financials. So you just take the property at what base value it is, right? You're not buying the property at what it could be. You're buying the property at what it is now. And I think a lot of people don't necessarily understand that is that, you don't want to end up overpaying on the promise that this property could, be worth $1 million, $2 million more in 2 years down the time, right? There's so many, other variables out there, exterior variables, that are going to affect if that happens or how quickly that happens, that are frankly outside of your control. So, we take the base financials, plug them in, and we don't do anything for the first year, right? We just leave it as is. So even though we're enacting the business plan and we're renovating units and we're, updating amenities and we're, swapping out tenants and raising rents and all of this, we're underwriting conservatively that nothing is going to happen the first year. And then from there, it's very minimal rent increases that we typically operate at, maybe 1 or 2% at most. Even though in the Hampton Roads area, we've seen incredible rent increases, like 3, 5, even 6, 7% in some areas. For example, like my Virginia Beach property, every time we have a tenant turn over, it's been like at least a 5% increase in rent every single time.
Wow.
And so, but you don't know if that's going to happen or continue to happen. So underwriting for smaller amounts of rent increases is absolutely paramount. Underwriting for, a smaller LTV than you expect to get, right? So if historically you have a lender who's been giving you 80% loan to value, which essentially you're putting a 20% down payment on the property, we like to underwrite for 70 or maybe even 75%, because you never know. And that makes a big difference in your end numbers at 20% down payment versus 25% down payment, right? So we typically underwrite for 70, 75. Interest rates, we typically add a few basis points on there, depending on what the market's looking like. And that the lending for that is going to depend if you're using agency debt, if you're using bridge loan, what that's going to look like. You can throw in a refinance if that's kind of what's in your business plan, or not throw one in. Right. So, I mean, there's a lot of different instances in when you're doing your initial underwriting that you can be really conservative on. Obviously inflating the expenses as well is another good way to boost up the numbers as well. Cause I think you'll find that a lot of financials from sellers end up being short in a few different categories for a number of different reasons. And sometimes they include insurance and taxes. Sometimes they don't. And so we just like to bump that up to 50% expense ratio right off the bat. And so you're essentially taking the rents that are coming in, timesing it by, 0.5, and that's what your NOI is. And then taking what the cap rate is in that area, and it gives you a pretty quick snapshot of what the property should be worth. So, that's what we do in terms of conservative underwriting. And then lastly, for the investors, we just stick to the old adage, like, under promise and over deliver. I mean, it's as simple as that, right? So if you're projecting to have, 8, 10, 12% returns, you probably on your underwriting, you probably shouldn't stick to that right off the bat, right? I would probably say, hey, you know, we're going to get in the 8 to 10 range if really you're projecting 12. That's how we like to go about it. Cause you know, as much conservative underwriting as we can do, there are going to be times where, and especially in the beginning, where it's going to be a little rough on the cash flow. Right. And so much rather over deliver and under promise than not be able to live up to our standards. Right.
Yeah. And by doing that conservative, you know, when you're doing your underwriting and being very conservative about it, about your expenses and everything, that gives you a lot of wiggle room, really, to you know, I guess, under promise and over deliver. So yeah, that's awesome. So you guys are doing it, you know, a very conservative route. You're not fudging the numbers to make it look like you know, it's a better deal than it is, and I would say that would make people a lot more comfortable to go with you guys and your funds. So that's awesome. So Anthony, you know, there's one of the other things I wanted to ask you is, how did you decide like that you wanted to focus on the Hampton Roads area as your market? Now, is it because you were stationed there? Cause I was stationed there for 15 years, right? And that's why I started investing out in Hampton Roads too, because I knew the area. I knew it well, right? And especially after being there for 15 years. But when I looked at multifamily, it seemed so difficult out there. And it looks like you're getting out there and you're able to find these, like the right property at the right time and do what you got to do to take them down. But have you started looking in, you know, other markets, or do you want to strictly stick to the Hampton Roads area?
Yeah. So good question. So I'll take two tacks on that. First off, yes, I was stationed there for about 4 years and I was very intimately familiar with the area. And so I felt very comfortable knowing like, hey, you know, this property is in Huntsville versus in, you know, outside of Oceana or versus on the Virginia Beach oceanfront, right? Vastly different areas when you're looking at the area, right?
Absolutely.
Or just knowing, hey, the property says it's in Norfolk. Okay, where in Norfolk? Because there's radically different properties and areas of Norfolk to go in, even in Virginia Beach or even in Portsmouth, right? So I think really understanding kind of the nitty gritty like neighborhood delineations there was huge for me, and so I knew that intimately, and so I was very familiar with the market. The second part of that is that my partner is local to that area and has had a large presence in the multifamily realm for a long time. So, you know, he's owned multifamily there for a while. He knows the brokers, he's been a buyer, he's been a seller, he knows, you know, the lenders, he knows the contractors, right? He's got the whole team kind of built out there to kind of be a well-oiled machine to take down these properties as they come up. And so that's why we initially stuck with the Hampton Roads area. Our Savannah deal was because one of the other partners on Marina Point brought me in on that deal. You know, for the most part, most of our properties are in the Hampton Roads area. Now, that being said, we're kind of shifting gears a little bit with the fund itself. And, you know, when we have capital built up within the fund, we're planning to deploy it in one of three different ways. First, we're going to put it into our own deals in the Hampton Roads area mainly, and the fund is going to own it right out, right? And the Mission First Capital team is going to manage it and run it and all that. The second way we're looking at it is to partner up with other veteran operators, you know, active duty guys, veteran guys around the country who we know pretty intimately, who are, you know, essentially doing exactly what we're doing on a syndication level. Partnering up with them and having them kind of do the boots on the ground deal provider options, and we act as the limited partners, or act as the funds for those guys. And you know, we have a lot of partnerships and relationships built up with a lot of great veteran guys around the country, and pretty key markets as well. And then third way we're looking to deploy is in probably in the next year or so, having what we call remote outposts. Essentially what we're going to do is we're going to have interns come through the ScoBridge program, guys who are active, you know, ending their active duty time, come learn everything it takes to, you know, take down multifamily deals, and come learn in Hampton Roads and learn how to talk to brokers, how to evaluate deals, how to find property managers, how to kind of build out their whole team on the ground and then deploy them to, you know, different locations around the country at these remote outposts, if you will, to places like Dallas and Florida and Arizona. And right, so we have kind of a group of veteran outposts set up all over the country to basically be mission first capital raisers, I guess, if you will. And so bankroll those guys with the fund. And it gives us an opportunity for to have more military guys come in and active duty guys come in and learn this trade and kind of build out their own future right off of active duty.
That's super cool, Anthony. I like that. So for my non-military listeners, I just want to point out what SkillBridge is. So SkillBridge is a program for military members that are transitioning out of service, for them to you know, from anywhere from 1 month to 6 months to learn a new trade, or, you know, they do an internship with a company and they're able to learn, you know, a specific skill set for that company. Mm-hmm. And, you know, while they're still, you know, technically on active duty, and it's pretty much as you're transitioning out of the military. It's actually something I'm looking to do as I come near the end of my service as well. So might look into that one and have to go check out one of these outposts, you know. So that's
awesome. Same. I'm trying to do it myself too.
Yeah, phenomenal. And it's, you know, for the military members that are listening, it's a fantastic program if you haven't heard of it, or if it's something that you're looking into. So in the Navy it's called SkillBridge. In different branches it's called there's different a different term for it, but I'm pretty sure all branches have some type of form of a transition program where you can do an internship. So if you're not sure about it, talk to somebody, talk to a, you know, your career counselor or whatever you have in your branch, but definitely learn about that. So that is awesome. I really like what you're doing with, you know, the active duty and the veteran community, you know, just the way that you guys are focused on them. That's just, it's phenomenal. So I want to say thank you for what you guys are doing. That's good stuff.
I appreciate it. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's been a wild ride so far with the fund, but it's exciting because we're giving opportunities that I think a lot of guys otherwise wouldn't be able to see. And it feels good to be able to kind of empower guys to not just throw their money, you know, their $50,000 deployment bonus into a brand new Camaro that they're going to drive for 2 months and then get rid of. And it, yeah. Want to have better, smarter financial decisions for a lot of guys. And I think Mission First Capital does that.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So I want to ask you something like more, I guess, personal for you, right? So besides real estate, where you're absolutely crushing it right now, are there other asset classes that you personally, yourself invest in, like maybe paper assets in the stock market or anything like that?
Yeah. So, the vast majority of what I have is invested in real estate, or specifically invested in the fund itself. I used to have money in index funds, specifically like my retirement fund and index, my IRA and index funds. And I just kind of found that it, really just wasn't doing it for me. Right. And I'd much rather have my money, have more control over my money and make it grow on my own terms rather than have someone else benefit from having it sit in an account and maybe make some money, maybe not. So I have some money in a Robinhood type account. It's called Acorns. I really like using that. You can set it to, you know, I put a small amount of money in there, like $50 to $100 a month. And, you know, it's kind of growing almost like a little nest egg for if I ever need to use it down the road. But Acorns essentially is just it's similar to like an index funds where you just put money into it and it kind of follows a general trend. And there's a certain amount of percentage of stocks and bonds and you know, different types of stocks that you have a mix of, but Acorns is a big one I use. I do have a little bit of money in Vanguard. But those are the main kind of assets outside of real estate I'm investing in. There's other companies that out there that I've been looking into, to like buy either like a stock in or I've actually been looking into like cannabis stock, something like that, because I think it's really interesting what's been going on with cannabis. But I gotta be careful about
gotta wait till you're out.
Yeah, exactly.
I was looking too, and it's like it's crazy. It's, you know, but you know, you can't do anything with it right now while you're active, right. Which is it is what it is. I'm not going to make my comment on that, but it's all good.
Yep. So that's the majority of what I'm investing in right now. And you know, as the fund goes off, that's my main focus in time and energy and money has been on the fund. Right. But once everything just start kind of gets rolling and we start getting, you know, capital deployed and stuff, it'll free up my time to start evaluating more opportunities. And so, you know, I'm looking at other syndications or other offerings from, you know, investors I know to be able to throw in my own capital into.
Fantastic. So I got one more question for you, Anthony, and
sure.
this is the big one. This is the real big one. Okay. This is the gotcha question. No, I'm kidding. Where can people find more information about you? And, you know, can you share your website or social media with us?
Sure. So our company is Mission First Capital. You can find us at missionfirstcapital.co. You'll see everything about us. You know, the team that we have built out there, the properties that we've invested in, how to invest with us. If you personally want to reach out to me though, you can find me on, most social medias. Well, I would say most, you can find me on Facebook, Anthony Pinto there. I'm on LinkedIn some, but Facebook is the main social media that I'm a part of, or going to the website, or you can email me at anthony@missionfirstcapital.co. And I'm pretty responsive to email.
Right on. So I'll make sure we have all those links in the show notes. I mean, Anthony, I learned so much just from this short conversation with you. I mean, the golden nuggets of wisdom that you shared was fantastic. And I really hope that for the folks listening to this, that you really got something out of it like I did, because I 100% did. So I really appreciate you taking the time all the way from Japan to sit here and have this conversation with me, which, by the way, I want to point out, you were the second person from Japan that I've interviewed. The other episode hasn't come out yet. It's going to be coming out actually this next episode that's coming out. So, but yeah,
awesome.
So I want to say again, thanks again for taking the time to talk with me today and sharing such an awesome story of what you're doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for having me. I've really enjoyed talking with you here and while it's still daylight outside my time.
Right on. Out of here.
Thanks for listening to the Average Joe Finances Podcast, your source for beating debt, saving money, and investing. Learn more at averagejoefinances.com.
The Average Joe Finances Podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only. Do not use this for any real estate or investment-making decisions.